Hi, I'm Susan Schoeffer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. Finances, that's this module, finances. When people first get divorced or they're in the process of getting divorced, the first thing that comes through their mind is, what is going to happen financially? We have this vision of one person getting everything and the other person living in squalor in some seedy side of town. It doesn't have to be that way. In fact, it shouldn't be that way. This module covers every aspect of finances, from your assets, knowing what your liabilities are. Are there hidden assets? Are there hidden liabilities? I touch on the professionals that you should seek out if you're running into financial challenges. Financial experts such as financial advisors, historical analysts, CPAs, certified public accountants, also known as CPAs. There are so many ways for you to get help. You do not have to be financially devastated by divorce. Let's get started.
When we think about finances and divorce, oftentimes there's this vision in our minds that one partner gets everything, the boat, the car, the vacation home, while the other person lives in squalor in one room in a seedy side of town. And that doesn't have to be the case. And while right now you may be nervous and frightened and you don't know what's going to happen financially, the information in this module will help you get through the process of divorce financially so you can come out the other side and be financially healthy. Throughout this module, I want you to think about needs and wants, because oftentimes we feel as though we need something and we really want it, and other times we want something we really need it. So I want you to keep that in the back of your mind. I also want you to think about what it is that you want or need. Also, if you want something, what is the emotional attachment to that something that you feel like you want? So let me start with a story. And that is a woman who came to me about her divorce, and she was adamant that she wanted the marital home. In fact, she was not going to go forward with the divorce unless she got the marital home. And I asked her what it was that she had to have with that house. And her answer was, she designed the house. She acquired an architect to build the house for how she wanted it when her children were little, two children. And she decorated the house. That was her home. She was a stay-at-home mom, and that was her haven. It was her workplace. It's where her family was, where her children were, and she just had to have the house. So my next question to her is, well, why did she have to have it now? And she said, well, even though her two children, now in their 20s, did not live at home, they had their own apartments and were living elsewhere, she wanted her grandchildren she didn't even have yet, as neither of her daughters were married. She wanted to know that in the future, her grandkids could come to that house and live the life that her children had. So I said to her, well, you know, if your children get married and they have their own homes, your grandchildren won't be living in the house with you. They will be visiting. Think how many times a year they would visit. Your children may move away from your city, your state, even the country. Who knows what's going to happen? And yet you're holding on to this house for something that may not even take place. She said, yeah, but I have to have the house. I want the house. And I said, okay, so there's more to it. And she said, well, that's where all my memories are. That's where everything I've always known has been. So we walked through several minutes discussing what it was that was so important to her. But then I said to her, there are many intact, happy, married couples who, after their children move away, they sell the home. The children don't go back to the house that they grew up in. Mom and dad, they go out, they buy a smaller place and then maybe a vacation home. That's typically what happens. So while she had this wonderful vision, this dream that the grandkids would come back, that was all a dream. And she was holding on to the house for a dream that may never take place. She said, well, I still want the house. She was adamant. So I gave her some exercises to do, and the next week she came back. And part of the exercises were, what was the financial obligations of the home? So the next time we met, we talked about the house, which was a 5,000 square foot house. I asked her how many levels the house had. She said 4. How many bedrooms? She said 5. Was it located on property? She said yes, 3.5 acres. Was there anything else on the property? And she said yes, a built-in swimming pool. So I asked her who was going to take care of the maintenance of the house. And she said, oh, my husband's going to have to. He always has. So I said to her, well, you realize in a divorce, he may not have to take care of the house. Who knows? Maybe he's willing to let you live in the house and finish paying off the mortgage. But the requirement for that may be that you take care of all the maintenance of the house. She said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. And I will not even agree to that. And I said, well, divorce is about collaboration. And while you may feel as though you are entitled to all this and you want all of this, you may not get all of this. So now let's think about some alternatives. So I asked her how much it cost to maintain the house. She did not know. So we left that to rest until the next time we chatted. When she came back to me the next time, we talked about the expenses, and they were high. Calculated just the pool and the maintenance of the property was about $50,000 a year. And I said to her, let's just pretend that your ex-husband-to-be is not required to pay the maintenance of the house. This is just the outside of the house. Can you pay for it? And she said, no. But, well, that was the big but. And I said to her, let's say you get a settlement. Do you want to pay a lump sum settlement towards the maintenance of this property to live in a house that's 4 levels, 5 bedrooms, 5,000 square feet? She said yes. And I said, well, let's look down the path a little bit. You spend all your settlement money on the maintenance of this house, and 5 or 6 years down the road, you don't have the money any longer. Your children aren't married. There are no grandchildren. And you're in this big house alone, and you have the maintenance. The grounds will grow over. The pool will be unkept. And you will be broke. And I share this story because this is what divorce that where you don't plan on how to take care of finances, this is what happens. We get so entrenched in what we want at the moment, and we don't want to waver from that. We hold on to that, and we have our attorneys fight for it. But then look what happens a few years down the road. She thought, still wanted the house. The fourth time we spoke, she said she found a really great condominium. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. A great condominium, 2-bedroom condominium in a wonderful eclectic neighborhood, people of all ages. There was a community center and a pool. And she said, and guess what? I don't have to pay for the pool. Well, there was a small condo fee, but nonetheless, wouldn't switch up on her. It was pretty constant. And she saw people everywhere versus where she was living, 3.5 acres out in the middle of the country, where there wasn't anybody but just her. And she was so happy about this newfound decision. And she said, I don't even want that house. I just want to put it up for sale. And I share this story because within a month, this woman went from she had to have the house, a house that was definitely not in her best interest to try to fight for, to something that was way more palatable, so more financially sound, and would enable her to set up a new life. We talked further about what it really was that she was holding on to, and it was the memories. It was about happier times. She can keep those memories. She has photographs. She has videos. She has her children. That was then, a different time, and now it was time to move on. So the whole bit about the house wasn't about a house that she absolutely had to have. It was a house that she wanted to cling on to memories, memories that she can keep, but it's time to make new memories. And so a better decision financially was made for her and her future. So I'd like you to think a little bit about this story and think even more about how that may apply to you. What are you holding on to that you really don't have to have? Because this wasn't about a need, although she does need shelter, but it was more about the want of what she wanted, which was something that was familiar, something that she's always had, and something that she was clinging on to. So I'd like to move forward and talk about how to stay financially healthy. There are 4 areas of finances that I want to address in this module. The first one is assets. Those are things that have monetary value to them. hidden assets, which I will expand on when we get to that part of this module, expenses, or also liabilities. Expenses can be coined as liabilities, and hidden liabilities. I will also talk about financial professionals to help you through divorce, the financial process of divorce. So let's start with assets. If we look at the worksheet that is in the guidebook, and also I have up here on the screen, you can see a list of the assets that you may have. So take some time, not now, but when you have some time, and list the assets you have and the value and any pertinent information about those assets. So let's start with the first one on this list, and that would be real estate. And more than likely, that's your marital home. The estimated value and anything about that house. Is there a first mortgage? Well, you have a first mortgage. How much longer you have on that mortgage? Is there a second mortgage or even a third? So make notation of the marital home. Any vacation properties you have, a beach home, a mountainside villa, anything outside of your first residence, any second, third properties. If you have properties that you rent out, include them on the asset list. Cars you may have. If you have children and they have cars and you own them, include them on the asset list. Motorcycles, trucks, jewelry, art, boats, pensions, IRA, 401k, 403b, and you may go, Susan, what are you talking about? Well, those are assets. You may not be able to cash them in until you retire, but those are assets. So include them on the asset list. Precious metals, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, checking accounts, savings accounts, season's tickets. People forget, but they may have football tickets, baseball tickets, soccer, hockey, theater, ballet. If you have season's tickets and they have value to them, please put that on the asset list. Furniture, flatware, crystal, china, and any antiques, insurance policies, annuities, even include burial plots. And some of you may go, burial plots? Well, sometimes people purchase burial plots. They get married with the, and of course the assumption is they will be buried together. But once there's divorce, likelihood of being buried together is limited and becomes nil. So figure out what you want to do with the burial plots if you have them. Do one of you want to buy the other one out? Or do you want to sell them? But they have an asset value. So include all of this information on the list. And why do I want you to do that? Because when you go to your attorney is going to ask what your assets are. And here you have it. It's listed out very nicely for them. I mentioned hidden assets. So let's talk about what hidden assets are. Hidden assets can be any type of asset that is on the asset list that we mentioned, except they're hidden. You don't know about it. Meaning your spouse has taken marital money and purchased assets that you don't know about and your name is not attached to them. So an example would be your spouse took money out of your marital accounts, or maybe you had several accounts and he or she didn't put money in. You didn't know it. Over time, they collected money and bought beachfront property in Florida. What? You don't even know about it. It's in their name. The deed to the property is in their name. Well, you have rights to that property because your spouse took marital assets, money that the two of you earned together, no matter who was working. It happened during the time of the marriage, and then bought property and didn't put your name on it. Sometimes this happens in very contentious divorces or high-dollar divorces. We see that frequently, where one partner starts stockpiling money and putting it in other places, whether it's in bank accounts offshore outside of the country, or if it's investing in real estate where the other spouse doesn't know about it. So if you believe there are hidden assets, there may be, and you need to know that. And we will talk about that a little bit later in this module. You need to know that because you are entitled to any assets that were purchased with marital money during the time of your marriage, assets that your name isn't on. So if your spouse has opened up a stock fund somewhere and is buying stock just in their name with the money that belongs to both of you, you're entitled to half of that money. So keep that in mind about hidden assets, and we will touch on that further in this module and what you can do about it. So typically when you go through a divorce, you think about what you want, what you want, what you want. What are you going to get? Are you going to get the house? How are you going to divide up the house? Who gets the jewelry? Who gets the cars? How are you splitting the pensions? And that's very important. But I don't want you to forget expenses or liabilities. In other words, what is it that you and your spouse owe? Do you have debts? Not only do you have debts, but what are the monthly expenses that you need to operate the house? Because remember what I said earlier in this module, when you get divorced, you go from one household where one or two incomes are supporting that one household, and then you are breaking it up into two households. So what I've done in the guidebook, and we are going to go over it here, is something that I call the 5-day expense checklist. The reason I devised this 5-day expense checklist is because typically what happens is you find an attorney or you just begin a relationship with an attorney. And by the way, as an aside, I hope you do this before you even get an attorney so that when you hand your brand new attorney your list of assets, you can also give the list of your expenses. But let's say you already have an attorney and they haven't gotten to this part yet. Typically what will happen, they will call you on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, who knows, the most inopportune time. And they will say to you, it'll be 4:30 in the afternoon, the kids are screaming, and they will say, tomorrow I need all your expenses. I need them by 10 in the morning because I'm going to talk to the other side, meaning your spouse's attorney, and we need to figure this out, what you owe and what your expenses are. So get it to me by 10 o'clock. Well, that sounds all very well and good. You still have dinner to make for the children, and then one of your children tells you they need 4 different color t-shirts for Spirit Day tomorrow. Then the other one informs you that they think they have a sore throat. And basically you jot down some things off the top of your head on a piece of paper and you email it over to your attorney the next day. And guess what? Everything gets forgotten. You jot down a few things you think you can remember, and then, wow, the rest goes out the window. So what I would like you to do is the 5-day expense checklist. And let me tell you why that is absolutely wonderful. Because the checklist is something that you go through each day. It doesn't have to be 5 consecutive days, but I want you to take 5 days. Maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day, day one. And you go through this list. Pick another day. It could be the next one, a few days later. It gives you some time to really think about what your expenses are. Not only what you owe, okay, you know about the mortgage and the utility bill and the phone bill, but things that are just not in your everyday purview. So let's go over the list of just some of the things that may be considered on the expense list. The first one is rent or mortgage, utilities, if you maybe have a landline telephone, internet, cell phone, that's for you. And if your children have cell phones, please include that. Car payment, if you have one. Car insurance. If you have homeowners or renters insurance, include that in there. Life insurance, health insurance. Tuition for the children. If your children are not in public school and there's tuition, please include that. Don't forget, if your children have any outside activities, such as if they take ballet or soccer, or they are in a football league, anything that has dues and fees and any associated expenses, uniforms, outfits. I talked to a mother not too long ago whose daughter is an ice skater, and how many times they replace the ice skates and the outfits for the championships. I mean, it just is unbelievable how expensive it gets and how quickly it gets expensive. So please include that in this category. Babysitters and daycare. So many times people forget about the daycare, the babysitter, and I've talked to people who spend, you know, $1,000 a month, and yet they forget to put that on the expense list. Lawn care. Even if you have a neighborhood young person who comes around and mows your lawn at $25 a clip, what does that add up to? If you have a large parcel of property and you are paying landscapers, you must include that. Because if you don't, later down the road, if you forget some of these things, they will add up. Note any kind of guesstimate of what appliance repair would be or replacement. So walk around your house and look at your appliances. Dishwasher, stove, microwave, oven, refrigerator, clothes washer, clothes dryer, hot water heater. And we all know Murphy's Law. One of these break down, one or two are right behind them to follow. We also know about dishwasher breaks down, repair person comes out, tells you it's going to cost $385 to fix it, and you spent $410 for the dishwasher when it was new. Now you have to replace it. So allocate money for what these things would cost if they went up on your dime. The water bill, snow removal. Hey folks, for those of you who live in the snow belt or places that get snow, what does it cost you to have it removed when you have snow? Pest service. If you have a pest service company that comes to your house a few times a year to check for termites or carpenter ants or bees or whatever it is, add that up and get an estimate of what that could cost you per year. Furniture replacement. Of course, food and gas, your monthly food and gas allowances. Car repair, pool maintenance if you have one. Vacations. I'm not talking about lavish vacations, but if there's something you do every year, you go to the beach, you go to the lake, whatever it is, add that into that expense. Summer camp for the children. If your children have been going to summer camp every year and you still want them to go, what would that cost? Dental expenses, doctor expenses. When you guesstimate this, some of you may think, well, you know, I have insurance, but you may have insurance that may change. If you have insurance, there are co-pays. Some insurance doesn't cover everything. So you have to allow for that. And under doctor expenses, include physical therapy. If one of your children has an injury, estimate if they have therapeutic work with like a counselor, that can be included also. Not only calculate this for the children, but also for yourself. And then, of course, there are prescription or over-the-counter medications. And then we will even bring it down to things like haircut, clothing allowance, credit card expenses, taxes. So do this 5 days, and after 5 days, you should have a pretty comprehensive list of what your expenses are. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, and I think out of the four categories, this is the most important. So I really want you to take mind to that. And this is what's called hidden expenses. And there are two that become very problematic and worrisome if you don't understand this and you don't have this figured out. And that is credit card and taxes. So let's talk about credit card expenses. You and your husband got married, you had a few credit cards in your names, and 2 or 3 years in the marriage, you and your husband decided, you know, we don't need those credit cards anymore. Let's get rid of 4 or 5 of them, and you will keep one. Okay, fair enough. You get divorced. 2 or 3 years later, you go to buy a car. Your FICO score, which is Fair Isaac Credit Reporting. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but a FICO score lets a credit grantor know your credit worthiness. And your FICO score is very low and you don't have any idea why. I pay my bills. This shouldn't happen. And then they pull your credit report and they notice that you have 3 or 4 credit cards and you haven't paid the bills or you've been late and you have no idea why that is. Well, then you find out that your husband or wife kept those credit cards. Charged up on those credit cards. Well, surely you're not going to put up with this. You're going to call the credit card companies and you're going to tell them, I didn't use those credit cards. No, I'm sorry. That's not my responsibility. Well, let me inform you, it would be your responsibility. If you and your spouse signed on credit cards and they are still active and your spouse is charging on them, you're responsible. So what I want you to do is check with the credit bureaus to make sure there are no credit cards or loans or any financial obligations on your credit report that shouldn't be there. And this isn't a bad idea to do anyway. With the amount of credit card fraud and identity theft that's out there these days, you should check your credit report pretty frequently, at least once a year, to make sure that there's no information on the report that is dodgy or something that you don't understand. So let me just step back. There are three major credit bureaus: Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And you can acquire a credit report from all three of the agencies. And you can also get, well, I call it the trifecta, but where you can get a 3-in-1. And you can look this up on Google and the internet. I think Credit Karma or Credit Sesame. There are agencies out there where you can get all three at once. And look over your credit reports and make sure that there isn't anything on there that's not familiar to you. And when you do go through the divorce process, if there are joint credit cards or joint loans, get those tied up. And if your spouse says to you, no, listen, we can keep these open. I'm not going to charge on them. No, spells, no. Don't go for that. Absolutely not. Because if they charge those cards up, you will be responsible. So let me just rehash this again so you understand. Check your credit reports. Make sure there's nothing on there that is not familiar to you. And then if you and your spouse have credit cards together, loans together, any kind of financial obligations together, inform your attorney and have those dissolved, reappointed, anything, so that you are safe after the divorce. The other area of hidden expenses I want to talk about are taxes. And this gets very scary. And it's even more frightening for couples who have been in business together. I've heard many stories of people who have had companies together, husband and wife, maybe a construction company, and he was out there dealing with the contractors and out there, and the let's say the wife was running the back office, and oops, just happened to forget to pay the payroll taxes. Didn't get around to it, or just there wasn't enough money at the time. Okay, a year or two or three or four or five, not typically five, but about 3 years go by, and then he finds out he owes the IRS $300,000 with penalties and interest that is mounting daily. And this happens, and it happens pretty frequently. So my suggestion is you take some time, and it doesn't take a lot of time, to call the Internal Revenue Service. They have a 1-800 phone number, customer service phone number. Will you be on hold for a little bit? You will. But whatever nuisance you think that may be now, the horror of what can happen after your divorce is insurmountable, unimaginable. So take the time and call. Find out if you have any unpaid taxes. You will have to provide your Social Security number to find out if you have any personal liabilities out there. And if you and your spouse had a business together, you will have to provide the IRS with the business name and the tax ID number. So make a point to do that. Check with the IRS to make sure that you don't have any personal taxes that are owed out, nor do you have any business taxes. Also do the same with your state tax office to make sure that you don't have any state taxes that are unpaid. And of course, if you had a business together, you want to make sure that there's no workers' comp withholdings that have not been paid. So please take some time to do that. It's not a lot of time, but it will save you in the end, because these are expenses that can become absolutely devastating. If there are taxes that are owed, there's penalties, there's interest that accrue, they accrue exponentially, whatever the initial debt was can just quadruple and very quickly. And credit card debt, if there are charge-offs are when the credit card companies have been trying to get payment and they can't, and after about 180 days, they just charge them off and send them to collection agency. But then that's a bad debt on your credit report. And then when you go out to buy a car or maybe rent an apartment or buy a home, you have this tremendous blemish on your history. So these are two areas that I am very strong about for you to check before you meet with your attorney, or if you already have an attorney, let them know that you are going to check these areas to make sure that everything is okay. And then if it's not, if you find out that your spouse has credit cards, as I said before, and you have them together, then you can iron that out before the divorce is settled. And if there's tax debt, you definitely want to have that settled before you go to your final divorce. So we've covered the four areas that I think are very important, and that is your assets, possible hidden assets, liabilities, and possible hidden liabilities. So at this point, you may think, well, I'm not a financial expert, Susan. What am I going to do? I don't understand any of this. Well, there are professionals who can help you. Your next question may be, I'm already spending so much money, Susan. You're sending me to all these professionals. I can't afford them. Well, the truth is, the professionals that I am going to mention to you will usually consult with you initially at no fee or a nominal fee to see if they are somebody that you need, and if you do, how they can work with you to make this an inexpensive part of the divorce process. Because I don't want you to have a million and one different professionals bogging you down financially. I want you to stay financially sound. But sometimes we need a little help from the experts. So one person who may be very helpful for you could be a financial advisor. A financial advisor is someone who may or may not be a certified public accountant, or also known as a CPA, but a financial advisor has training and experience in finance. Sometimes they have a bachelor's or master's degree in finance, and they can help you with your budgeting. If you just feel like you need some budgeting, some retirement planning, they can sit down with you and help you with those type of things. Then there is a professional called a forensic accountant. A forensic accountant is the person you want to help you locate hidden assets. Remember, we talked earlier about hidden assets, money, bank accounts, real estate property that you don't know about. And while I was chatting about that, you probably thought, okay, Susan, my spouse has hidden all this stuff. I don't know how to find it. A forensic accountant can help you do that. Forensic accountants are trained and experienced on locating bank accounts, money, money that's been laundered, meaning money laundering is when money starts in one location and it goes through another location and somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else. And it takes a real journey until it gets to its final destination. In other words, it throws the person off who's trying to look for it. Well, they are very well versed at finding money that's been laundered. They can find real estate property. Now, let me talk about the drawback of a forensic accountant. They can be expensive. So if you think your spouse has hidden $20,000, I don't know what a forensic accountant could charge you, but they may charge you a lot more money than what it's worth to find the money. So when you sit down with a forensic accountant, you have to look at the cost versus risk. How much money do you have to pay a forensic accountant to find the money you're looking for? If you're in a situation where you think your spouse has hidden $1 million worth of money and assets in real estate, and a forensic accountant tells you they will charge you $100,000, it may be willing to go that route. So if you feel as though there are hidden assets, a forensic accountant may be the way to go. Another financial professional that you may want to consider is an historical analyst. A historical analyst may or may not be a certified public accountant, but they are not biased. So they do not work for your attorney or your spouse's attorney. They are not about the struggle. She wants the house, well, he wants the cars, and she wants this and he wants that. They come in very non-biased. And what they try to do is help both parties determine some kind of equitable settlement. They talk about, here's what you have. Here's how you've lived. They determine the difference between needs and wants, and they have the client look at, and the client meaning you and your spouse, look at what is it that you really need? What is it you really want? And how a settlement can be equitable for both parties. The other professional that I want you to be aware of is what they refer to as a quadro. Now, a quadro is an acronym for Qualified Domestic Relations Order. And so a quadro is really a quadro attorney. And a quadro attorney is somebody who assists in the dividing of retirement plans and pensions as part of a divorce settlement. Now, quadros do other things, but primarily they're very, very talented and experienced and well-versed at dividing retirement accounts. So your attorney, through this process, will refer you out, more than likely, to a quadro. And how it works is, after you're divorced, the quadro comes in and then disperses the retirement, the pension, 401k, IRA, to the parties. It doesn't happen beforehand, but here's the but, you need to know before the divorce of any 401ks, IRAs, pension plans, profit sharing plans, all that has to be provided to your attorney, because after the divorce, this will go off to the quadro that is assigned to the case. And usually what happens is your attorney will either find a quadro attorney for you, or you can find a quadro attorney for yourself. So then the next question is, what's the next step? The quadro typically has, and it depends on the state, 3 to 6 months to disperse this, meaning the retirement accounts, pension plans, profit sharing plans, to the parties involved. So what typically happens, let's say the quadro comes to you and your spouse and they say, here's my invoice. I cost $500 to do this for you. Your spouse writes a $250 check to the quadro attorney. You write a $250 check to the quadro attorney. And within the next 6 months, you will have those funds dispersed to you. Because how it works is, if you have, let's say, a 401k with your company, and it's getting divided between you and your spouse, remember, you made contributions during the marriage, what happens is they, the quadro attorney, have to notify in writing all legalese, the fund manager, wherever this pension or wherever your 401k is, let them know that this is a divorce force division. They have to go through all the bells and whistles, the legalities of doing that, and then dispersing the money to you. And the quadro may contact you and say, look, this is a 401k. Do you want us to roll this over into your already existing IRA? Or do you want us to send you a check? And then you let them know what you want to do, almost always in writing. This is very, very legalese, because there's so many nuances and reporting requirements to the IRS, you know, and things like that for retirement plans, pension plans, profit sharing plans, so that it gets a little complex. But what the job of the quadro attorney is to keep the complexities away from you and your spouse, and just have you do the proper steps that are necessary to stay within the legalities of dispersing these funds. So it's important for you to know that that exists. And more importantly, go back to the asset list that you know about the 401k, the pension plans, the profit sharing plans, so that information can then be divulged right after your divorce to the quadro. So I hope I didn't confuse you with that. I hope I've given you some information that's necessary for you to have so that you can stay financially healthy. So as I wrap up this module, I want to touch on why it's so important to go through the asset list, look for hidden assets, the expense list, look for hidden expenses, is because most settlements are not modifiable, except for three areas: custody, child support, and deception. So let me touch on these three areas. First of all, custody. Custody is a ongoing relationship until the child or children reach majority, which is usually 18 years old. So that means you and your spouse will have this custody relationship for several years. If your children are 2 years old and 4 years old, 7 years old at the time of your divorce, so many things could change during that time that would require, or possibly require, a change or modification in the child custody. For example, your job changes and you are required to travel a little more than you do now. you may modify the custody or ask the courts to modify your custody arrangement so that your children are with your ex-spouse a little bit more and he or she can take care of them because now you have to travel more for your job. Or let's say one of you become injured, hurt, an alcohol or a drug problem, and it's better for the children to be with the other parent, then custody arrangements can be modified. The second reason is child support. If one of the parties who pays child support loses their job or becomes ill, the other party or both parties can ask for a modification of the child support payment, either temporarily or permanently, depending on the situation. The third modifiable exception is if there's been deception on the part of one of the parties. For example, during the course of the divorce, as you were gathering evidence, asking about bank accounts, asking about tax debt, and that person lied, and you did your due diligence, and let's say this was your spouse, and you did your due diligence, and you looked for bank accounts, and you did everything necessary to find what you thought you needed to find, didn't uncover it, but then after the divorce, you found out your spouse was deceptive. You can then ask the courts to modify the settlement or reopen the case. And that's what they call it, a reopen, when you open a case that's already existing. So they reopen your case and then you can present it with the fact that you did your due diligence before the divorce, you did your investigation, so to speak, and did not find hidden assets or you did not know about hidden expenses. Now you have found them out and you're asking the courts to help you. You want some kind of modification of the settlement, meaning the money is owed to you and you should have, or you want to be absolved from certain liabilities or expenses that you didn't know of. Other than these three conditions, almost all settlements are non-modifiable. So it's imperative that you take the time and go through the asset checklist, look for any hidden assets if you think they're out there, go through your expenses, and definitely check to see if there are hidden expenses, primarily taxes and or credit cards, installment loans, or any other kind of obligations that you don't know about. Make sure you cover these bases because it is very difficult, if not almost impossible, to go back to court to tell a judge, oops, guess what? I forgot all about the credit cards we have and now he or she's running them up and I can't afford to pay them. It's not going to fly. Or you forget things like the children's camp, the children's football games, the children's vacation, or their private school. It's not going to be easy to get those type of things modified, if at all. So please take the time now and go through these lists and make sure you know where your finances are. Do your due diligence. Know your assets and liabilities, because a well-prepared client is the best client for their attorney. And if you are the best client for your attorney, you will get the best settlement for you.